in all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the July 2nd edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Today marks the 10-year anniversary of Ghana's disappointing exit from the World Cup football tournament in South Africa. Ghana lost to Uruguay 4-2 on penalty kicks in a controversial quarterfinal in Johannesburg. Yao Ofusularbi in Accra spoke with two key members of that Ghanaian World Cup team for their reflections, and Yao joins us now. Sporty greetings, Yao.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. July 2, a date that many Ghanaians are not particularly excited to hear because of the history attached to it. A day that evokes memories of pain, disappointment and regret, and years after the events of that day in 2010, it still lingers in the minds of many. The 2010 FIFA World Cup was Ghana's tournament by far. The West African country beat Serbia and the United States en route to reaching the quarterfinals of the competition for the very first time, and only the third African country to attain this feat. In the ensuing game against Uruguay at that stage of the competition, the Black Stars started well, Suleiman Tari scoring just on a stroke of halftime. The second half provided evidence of football being a game of two halves. The game came into its own, though, after Diego Forlan scored. But it was the final minutes of extra time that changed history. The infamous Luis Suarez handball on the line that denied Ghana a chance to score resulted in a penalty which Asamoah Gyan missed. Former Ghana defender John Paintel, who played in that game, says it is still a very difficult game to watch, even now that 10 years have passed.
You know, that's why I said I don't like watching it, you see. He took the ball confidently, okay? He put the ball down, he went back, came, found his spot, he hit it. Yeah. And the ball, like I said, that ball is very fast.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was a bit light. So if it was like a normal ball, like that power, he would have gone in. But like I said, this is football. Football can humble you. Football can make you big.
Yeah.
So, you know, at that time, everybody went shocked. But we started saying, hey, come on, there's more time.
Okay.
We could still push and then get them at the end.
Yeah.
So I was thinking that at least what we did to U.S., that spirit will repeat itself.
Asamoah Gyan had been the outright African star of the tournament and typically the man who was vilified after that infamous penalty miss. He says he still has memories from that day.
Honestly, I haven't watched the game. You know, I always go back and then watch the penalty. You know, that is the only thing I watch. People even tag me, you know, I have to just watch it and then just shake my head. You know, I wish we could go back again and then have that penalty. But life goes on. You know, there are a lot of great players who have missed a crucial penalty, like what I did, you know. But as I always say, life goes on. You know, honestly, I always watch it all over and all over again. And it's something that I will never forget.
2010 was a massive year for Ghana football. A year that meant so much for how football is seen in Ghana and on the continent. It paved way for new stars to be born, and in many ways, the peak of Asamoah Gyan's powers. He named that year as his biggest ever stage.
I always say 2010 year was my best year in my career, my whole career. Everything I did was working. Even I came to music, businesses was working, you know, I was having contracts, winning awards, you know, my whole life changed, you know, I became an icon. Everybody saw me in the whole world, you know, and even the tournaments, I was in the top three best players in the world at that time. You know, I was on top of the world, you know, I was living the life I could never forget.
There will not be many chances to get back to the spot the Black Stars reached in 2010. Like Cameroon in 1990 and like Senegal in 2002, the Ghana team of 2010 will always be remembered by one penalty miss and the man who orchestrated it, Asamoah Gyan. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Yao Fusulabi in Accra. Back to you in Washington, Sonny.
Thanks, Yao. Now let's go to Yaounde, where Cameroon's football authorities say they're confident they can complete the infrastructure for hosting the postponed Africa Cup of Nations in 2022. The 24-team tournament, the continent's premier soccer extravaganza, was originally scheduled for January 2021. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaounde.
Sports Minister Narcisse Mwalekambi says the postponement of the Africa Football Cup of Nations offers Cameroon the opportunity to prepare a memorable competition.
Sur la presque totalité des sites, les travaux sont accélérés pour la mise.
He says Cameroon will have time to quantitatively and qualitatively accelerate work on all sports, health, communication and road infrastructure in order to offer Africa a very successful continental football competition. He says Cameroon is going to perfect what it has already done to offer African youths a memorable AFCON. On Tuesday, the Confederation of Africa Football, CAF, announced that it had postponed the continental soccer event by a year. The CAF said it was moving the competition to January 2022 due to the impact of the coronavirus pandemic across the continent. Cameroon last week said some key construction projects in the capital Yaounde and the seaside town of Douala had slowed due to COVID-19. It was the same situation in the northern town of Garoua, the western town of Bafoussam, and Limbe and Boya in the English-speaking southwest region. Awa Fonka, governor of the west region, says he now has more time to make sure all AFCON fields and roads are in place.
Le taux d'exécution des travaux dépassait 40%.
He says, although construction work is almost complete on stadia in western Cameroon, only 40% of road infrastructure for the African Football Cup of Nations has been complete. He says he hopes that with the postponement of AFCON, companies will have more time to complete work that was either stopped or reduced due to COVID-19. The postponement has been received with mixed reaction. Football fans say they are anxious to see their teams play. Annabelle Singer says she took a loan to build a restaurant near the Olembe Stadium in Yaounde that will host some matches. She says it will not be easy for her to either repay the loan or pay interest.
The postponement of the Africa Cup of Nations is not easy for the world of sports in general. Many people, you know, invested so much in the construction of hotels, of restaurants, with the hope that they would regain this money by hosting the Africa Cup of Nations January 2021. I mean, imagine now the interests are piling up, and more so, the hotels, the restaurants will not be used for the purposes for which they were initially intended.
This was not the first time the CAF changed the tournament's dates. It was originally scheduled for June and July 2021, but was moved forward to January due to Cameroon's hot summer climate. On Tuesday, the CAF also confirmed the African Nations Championship, the biannual tournament for home-based players, is being postponed by a year. It will also take place in Cameroon in April 2021. Moki Edwin Kinzaka for VOA News, Yaounde.
Dear respected friends, sports greetings. This is Milutin Mitchell-Sredovic, coach of Zambia national football team Chipolo Polo and former national coach of Uganda Cranes. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thanks.
Thanks, coach. July 2nd also marks World Sports Journalists Day. There will be an international Zoom video conference on Thursday focusing on how the coronavirus pandemic has affected the role and work of sports journalists. To find out more, Iron Mike Imbonye called Italy, where he reached the president of the International Sports Press Association, Gianni Merlo.
I think that the journalist has done a lot, not only enough, because the journalists were able to create situation and so on. Why? I think that in this period, especially, the quality of the work was higher than usually because people has to make study, new situation, and I think that in some way, even us, we have created an e-college and we spoke with the young reporters of all around the world of 47 countries, and we made some cultural program very important. So I think that in some way there was also a positive part on what unfortunately is happening in the world for us.
What's your assessment of sports journalists' role in the coverage of sporting activities in this COVID-19 era?
It's important. It's more important than ever because the sport is one of the activities of the mankind that will bring back to the normal life. It's more difficult for sport in this moment, but sport now have also to find new solution for the future. I think that this coronavirus will help us to understand better how we can behave in the future and how we can organize in the future also. There will be a lot different than now. But I think that is during every big event that is changing the life of the people, after a period of a bad situation, will come a new reality. And we will work in the new reality.
What should the sports journalists do to protect themselves in the COVID-19 period or era?
We did a lot of work from home. We were in contact with everybody in the world. And I think that in this period, we have also enhanced our connection with the world, because personally I can tell you that as association we were more active than ever, and we have had the opportunity to be together in a high level situation. For example, July 2nd is the Sport Journalist Day because our association was born in 1924 in Paris, the 2nd of July. We are organizing an e-conference with the participation on Zoom, with the participation of more than 700 colleagues coming from 142 countries. Can you imagine 142 countries connected in the same time speaking about sport journalism? This means that sport journalism is still very vital. The message for the world is that we have to believe in our profession, because we are fighting for the transparency and credibility of sport, because these are the pillar of sport, transparency and credibility. Without credibility and transparency, there is no sport and there is no culture. So we have to continue on this way, to be independent, to fight, to defend these principles, because our principles that are the same in every country. In the sport, there is no difference in the interpretation. There is only one interpretation, and we have to follow this.
That's Gianni Merlo, the president of the International Sports Press Association, and he spoke with Iron Mike Imbonier on the telephone from Italy. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
VOA's Jim Stevenson says football fans, officials, and players are delighted down under after Australia and New Zealand won the hosting rights to the 2023 Women's World Cup. Jim had that story and more football news in his latest Game Room, which you can play anytime via voanews.com. Here's Jim.
I'm Jim Stevenson. Welcome to the Game Room.
is such a momentous decision for Australia and New Zealand and also for our region, for the Asia Pacific. The first time a Women's World Cup has been held here. The first time a Women's World Cup has been held in the Southern Hemisphere.
Australia's Foreign Affairs Minister Maurice Payne is excited that FIFA, football's world governing body, has chosen Australia and New Zealand to co-host the 2023 Women's Football World Cup. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern is also thrilled.
It's incredible, and I think probably we're only really still perhaps coming to terms with the scale of what the 2023 FIFA Women's World Cup will mean for New Zealand. It is an incredibly large event, but off the back of what we've seen with cricket and rugby, it's a chance for us to showcase our athletes, what role models they are, and the work we're doing to bring equality into sport as well.
Also hoping new female players will benefit is Australia goalkeeper Lydia Williams.
It gives young girls an opportunity to dream big, to see amazing players on their home soil, and it'll do wonders for not only the women's game but football in general in Australia.
Minding the net for New Zealand is Erin Naylor.
I think it's just going to give women's football and women's sport in general a huge boost. It's the biggest sporting event in the world, and so I think when New Zealanders get behind it and see how exciting it is, I think it will do great things for the game.
New Zealand midfielder Paige Satchel is looking forward to playing the biggest tournament on her home soil.
I mean, it's pretty unreal. I got up this morning to hear the announcement, and yeah, I was just ecstatic. It's an amazing opportunity for New Zealand football and just for sport in general. And for me personally, it's going to be amazing just to have my family and friends all there to support us. So yeah, I'm super excited.
Australia midfielder Tamika Yallop thinks the Women's World Cup will help showcase Oceania football as more of an equal to the traditional European teams.
I think it's a great step towards, you know, bridging the gap between Europe and down under, I guess, with how intense football is and the football culture. I think it'll bring a pretty strong football culture. You know, Australia and New Zealand's already pretty big with their sporting culture, but it'll put a major focus on women's sport and football as well. So I think it's a great step forward in growing the game.
The 2023 Women's World Cup joint bid beat Colombia 22-13 in a vote by FIFA's ruling council, which judged Australia and New Zealand as having the best commercial prospects for women's football. Liverpool officially claimed the Premier League football title for the first time in 30 years, despite having 7 games remaining on its schedule. Jurgen Klopp took over as manager at Liverpool in October 2015. The team went from the middle of the pack to both European champions and English champions. Money seemed to be the biggest obstacle to mounting a Premier League title challenge, as Liverpool didn't match with the spending power of Manchester United, Manchester City, and Chelsea. Bayern Munich head coach Hansi Flick says his time as coach has been simply a lot of fun after the German club recovered from early season troubles to win its 8th straight title. The most personal highlight is the way I enjoy every single game together with my entire coaching staff. We enjoy the games because they are just so fun to watch the players execute our philosophy, the pleasure and fun that they have. We have seen even after this Corona phase that even without the fans, they were able to coach themselves well. It's great to be able to experience this, and it's simply a lot of fun. Bundesliga Rookie of the Year Alphonso Davies praised Bayern's attack in a 4-0 victory over Wolfsburg.
Yeah, it's been good. You know, we have players up front that can, you know, get the job done. You know, especially Lewandowski, you know, scoring goal after goal. Thomas Müller, you know, set it up, and we brought. Yeah, overall, I think as a collective, you know, we did well as a team.
French winger Serge Gnabry said the title celebrations can wait until the last game against Bayer Leverkusen on Saturday.
Yeah, I think we celebrated very well in Bremen on this evening. Now today a little bit, but we know we have next Saturday coming, so we have to be prepared for that. And after that, we have a lot of time to celebrate.
And thanks to VOA's Jim Stevenson for that sporty Game Room package. Game Room has new stories each week, and you can play anytime via voanews.com. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. My Voice of America colleague, Gwen Uden, joins us now. Gwen says trainers at a boxing club in Kenya are offering lessons to children during a nationwide lockdown. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. In March, the Kenyan government ordered the shutdown of schools nationwide to help prevent the spread of the coronavirus. For months, school children have been forced to find a much-needed outlet. And in one area of Nairobi, dozens of kids have walked through the doors of the Mathari North Boxing Club, where trainers offer lessons to children who would otherwise be stuck indoors. Assistant boxing coach John Kamani tells Reuters News the kids learn about more than just the sport. Kamani says since the passing of the club's founder, trainers have taken over the gym and given back to the community free of charge. He says kids don't come to the boxing club to just learn the sport, they learn life lessons as well. The club was established in 1985, and before John Kamani became an assistant coach, he was one of several professional boxers who trained at the gym. Now, Kenyan Vanessa Wanjira trains there, and the 14-year-old says she has big dreams of one day becoming a champion.
Train because I want to be a champion, and instead of staying in the slums, I come here and start training with my colleagues here in the gym. And I prefer training than fighting in the slums with those girls who can lead me to bad ways.
Andrew Odhiambo has boxed since he was 8 years old. Now 18, he says he wants to use the sport to help him give back to his community. Odhiambo says he knows everything about boxing and he wants to help his peers. And with more students coming in than trainers can handle, he comes in to help. He says when a coach is not in, he takes over training sessions so students won't miss a class. The gym has seen more and more neighboring kids coming in to train during the global pandemic, and the club is adhering to all social distancing and hygiene guidelines to fight the virus. Head coach Bernard Marui says he hopes the boxing program will help kids stay busy and out of trouble. And with training at such a high demand, Mathari North Boxing Club could be grooming the next Kenyan champion. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscast. Every hour, on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
Let's give a Sunny Side of Sports birthday salute to Alex Morgan, co-captain of the world champion U.S. Women's National Soccer Team. Alex was born July 2nd, 1989, near Los Angeles, California. She helped the USA lift the trophy at both the 2015 and 2019 Women's World Cup tournaments. Alex is a top striker on the USA team, and she has scored 107 career international goals. In addition to her national team duty, Alex Morgan plays for the Florida-based Orlando Pride team in the National Women's Soccer League. Happy 31st birthday, Alex Morgan. And that wraps up the July 2nd edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues.
It's about listening to them
and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.